Hello and welcome in to another week on the Views Pod. We missed last week, but it was a little hectic last week. Greg Smith joining me here, Derek Peterson. Greg, how you doing, bud?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I am tired, as I assume you are, though. We had a busy week last week.
We did have a busy week, but I'm actually rejuvenated now.
Like, yeah.
I'm back. It took me about a week, but I'm ready to roll.
Probably got a lot more rest.
I did.
In this last week than you did in the month leading up to it.
And like, it felt weird at first. Like, I didn't have to constantly check my phone or like keep refreshing stuff or look to see if I got a new text message. Like, it was nice to have a normal pace this week.
It's great. It's great. 2018 recruiting is done.
It is.
2019 recruiting
already
technically
begun.
Has begun, but not, yes. I mean, not quite. Nebraska's coaches are in Orlando right now. Scott's hanging out with a Chicago Cubs hat and a UCF t-shirt. You're sighing.
So disappointing. Like, I'm more, for the record, I'm more upset about the Chicago Cubs hat than I am about the UCF shirt. As a Chicago White Sox lifelong fan, I hate the Cubs.
You picked the wrong team, man.
I did not. I picked the correct team to align with my father.
Today we're talking a little bit of recruiting, a little bit of Nebraska football. Greg had a really good feature on Adrian Martinez, the incoming quarterback recruit that the Huskers got in the latest edition of Hail Varsity Magazine. So we'll get his thoughts on Martinez a little bit later. Jacob Padilla is going to join for the first time in a while, and we're going to talk about some hoops, some Nebraska hoops. Greg, thoughts on the hoops? Nebraska ball.
Nebraska ball is back. can I say that? They're doing really well. I'm happy for the team. They should make the tournament the way that they're going. I'm so sick and tired of this debate with people about whether or not they should make it. If they win, you know, 21, 22, 23 games, they should definitely make the tournament.
So, okay, so I think this is one of those seasons where they're not just going to be able to win, like, say we have 14 Big Ten wins and let's get into the tournament. But I think they're going to get in, and they're going to be like a one seed, because did you read or did you hear about this story that Pete Thamel dropped from Yahoo Sports yesterday? Basically just a bombshell on college basketball. Did you hear about this?
I did hear about it. This is horrible timing if you're one of those schools.
It's great for me as someone that loves drama and wants to know what's going on and wants this all to kind of just blow up before the selection Sunday and before the committee makes its March picks. Initial thoughts, initial reaction on just kind of reading some of this stuff and hearing that college basketball is about to be indelibly changed, as Thamel put it.
If you aren't cheating, you are trying, right?
Right.
Is my initial thought, because I feel like I wonder though when this like eventually actually comes out and you get actual schools and coaches and players attached to this. I wonder what the level of surprise amongst college basketball fans will be, because I feel like there's this kind of unwritten thing or unspoken thing that we just don't talk about, and that a lot of these programs are dirty to the point to where so many of them are dirty. It's just kind of standard operating procedure. And so I'm curious to see what the real reaction ends up being. Now, by all accounts, Nebraska has not been one of these schools. In fact, I do know of a couple of situations where handlers have approached Nebraska and Tim Miles kind of pushed them off to the side and said, nope, we're not doing it that way. So don't expect to see anything come out about Nebraska. But some of these other schools, it just feels like standard operating procedure.
This is probably going to be dumb to say, or I feel bad saying it, but at the same time, Nebraska is one of the – I think, are they the only team in major college basketball that hasn't ever won an NCAA tournament
game? Yes, they are.
They're not cheating.
Right. That probably some nails that one down for you right there.
But in that report, there was a line that almost half of the schools listed in the NCAA's top 16 seeds that was released recently are either going to be vacating a national championship or vacating their appearance. Let's run through the schools real fast.
Okay.
And let's just play a guessing game and see who's dirty. So there's 16, so we'll pick 8.
Pick 8.
So we'll go through the first 4. We'll just break it down by 4s.
Okay.
West Virginia, or not West Virginia, Virginia, Villanova, Xavier, and Purdue.
Okay, I'm going to say out of that group, Villanova.
Okay.
Okay.
So no Xavier, no Purdue,
nope.
No Cincinnati?
Nope.
Okay.
Well, no, you didn't say Cincinnati. You said Virginia, Villanova, Xavier, Purdue. Cincinnati is going to be one.
Oh, Cincinnati's the next one. Okay.
Yeah.
Cincinnati, Duke, Auburn, Kansas.
Duke, Auburn, Kansas.
Pretty much all of them.
So all of those teams. I think all of them.
Okay, next 4. Michigan State, Texas Tech, Clemson, North Carolina.
Oh, wow, I'm going to get past eight because I'm going to say, well, Michigan State, I'm going to say no because I think they've got issues, but separate from this particular scandal, I'm going to say Clemson and North Carolina. Like, that's the, so now I'm already up to seven. Yeah.
You're doing bad things, but you're just not doing these
bad things. Yeah, you're not doing these bad things. Yeah.
Last four, Tennessee, Ohio State, Oklahoma, and Arizona. Now, Arizona has already been named, so that would put us at eight.
That would put us at eight, but I think Tennessee is in there. I think Oklahoma's in there, too, so I'm already at nine. Like, am I just suspicious of everybody?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's fair, though. Like, he said almost half, so you could go over eight.
Well, there we go.
Nine is good. You think Oklahoma?
Yeah.
Lon Kruger is such a nice guy, though.
Yeah, but the nice guys want to win, too.
Yeah, but... Oklahoma doesn't win.
I guess that is true. So our theory here, I think what we've uncovered is our theory is if you're winning and you're good, you're cheating.
Yes.
Okay.
And if you're not winning, and by winning we mean like national titles.
Yeah, like you're going to Final Fours.
You got to be winning national titles. And okay, Oklahoma went to a Final Four, but they got the wheels blown off the wagon by Villanova, so that doesn't really count. I think all of Norman has just kind of blocked that game out of their memory.
They have.
Yeah.
But I think that this is – I really think that this is so widespread in college basketball because there's just so much – like it's to me, it's a lot easier to cheat in college basketball. And what I mean by easier is that it's more accessible, right? So you've got the shoe companies and you've got AAU coaches and all of this stuff, and then knowing an agent because you know that a guy may be going to a particular school to be a one and done. Like it just – feels like the access to cheating and the reward is so much higher too, because if you get one or two like really top level players to your team, that's a Final Four run, right? Whereas if you did that in football, where people are cheating too, but if you did that in football and you only got two guys like that, you could have two really good players, but that may not turn into a Final Four appearance. In basketball, it likely will.
Right. Perfect example of that is Oklahoma this year. Last year they were 20 loss program, and this year they add Trae Young, and they were looking like a Final Four team for a while. And like you said, in football, unless you're adding a quarterback, unless you're adding like the top prospect in the
Cam
country.
Newton.
Cam Newton, yeah.
Perfect
example. You're not going to be seeing kind of rapid changes that quickly. A lot of these instances of kids getting impermissible benefits or kids getting deals from shoe companies or kids getting pushed towards agents, a lot of it, in the basketball world, is coming from kids that are coming from not great situations at home. Do you fix this by paying college athletes? Because this, I mean, I was looking at, this was a debate on Twitter all day yesterday when this stuff was breaking, that these kids are still amateurs. These kids, I mean, you can't pay them. You shouldn't pay them. They're getting paid in scholarships. But at the same time, college basketball and college football are just enormous cash cows. That it's not, it kind of really blurs the lines between amateurism and professional sports. Does this way of college coaches cheating to get players, does it get fixed by paying them?
I think it helps. I don't know if you totally fix it, because you'll always have somebody that wants more, right? It's just kind of the American way. You're always going to have people that want more money, more players, more wins, whatever it may be. But I do think it would be helped. It's always laughable to me about this. Oh, they're getting paid and you know, scholarships and free educations. And it's really the schools that they're going. Like the school is really the thing that's generating the money. If that were the case, no one would be going to all of these lengths to secure these top talents to come to these schools if it was really just the schools that were generating all of this revenue. You watch those teams because of those top end players. If that were the case, then we would be sending, when we have, you know, football recruits or basketball recruits, you'd be sending the chemistry professor to their house to recruit them if it was about the school. It's not. Like, that's the cold reality of it. And I think when we actually confront that cold reality is when we can start to get some real change about what's going on with the rules.
And I think the hard thing with paying players, and this is something that I keep going back and forth on, is if you say, okay, we're going to do that, teams aren't going to want to pay the 15th man on their bench, the walk-on that doesn't play. Teams aren't going to want to pay, like, you know, the golf athletes, the golf team. Like, they're just going to want to pay the star football players and the star basketball players, and then you're going to get into a whole different issue. Let's talk about recruiting. Let's talk about Adrian Martinez. Let's transition to him. You had a fantastic story on him. I want to get just your impression of talking with him and the kind of kid that he is. Not necessarily football talent, but the kind of kid that he is.
he's impressive. Like, there's no real other way to put it. And I've had numerous people throughout the media that have talked to him and have told me the same thing. You know, hey, I had heard about how impressive he was and kind of how poised and mature he was. And then I talked to him, and I just couldn't believe it. Like, basically to a man, everyone that talks to him says that exact thing. And it's 100% true. He seems like he's older than he is. The first time I talked to him was in December, right after they offered him. And he saw that picture on Twitter of Mario Verduzco in his living room. And that's kind of when Mario Verduzco got introduced to everyone. And that was great in its own right. But I talked to him right after that. And he could not have been more poised and wise beyond his years, which I think will serve him well as the quarterback at a place like Nebraska, where there's so much spotlight on that quarterback and so much attention given to him. And you're the face of the program. Like, eventually, when you become the starting quarterback, you are the guy, especially in this offense, too, to kind of bleed into the football side. But I think he's well equipped to handle that, and that kind of leadership and the way that he carries himself will serve him well.
What is Adrian's ceiling at Nebraska? I think we're in agreement that if it's not this year, it'll be in the near future that he's the starting quarterback. So what's his ceiling here?
I think that he has the ability to be an all-conference caliber quarterback. Like, I really look at him and think that he could be – we could look up in a few years and go, man, he's the best quarterback in the Big Ten. Like, I don't think that that's a stretch. And if he progresses at a similar rate as McKenzie Milton, you saw what he was able to do in the numbers and efficiency numbers that he put up. And not just him, and this is something I actually touched on in the piece, cheap plug for that, is that if you look back at the history of quarterbacks with Scott Frost, whether it's McKenzie Milton, Vernon Adams, Marcus Mariota, on and on, like, these guys were high efficiency quarterbacks. That is, and when you look at Adrian Martinez and even Tristan Jebbia, like, they share those kind of traits where they're very accurate quarterbacks, smart, quick decision makers. That's what Scott Frost looks for in this offense. And I don't think that Adrian should be along those same lines in terms of efficiency. It's whether or not you can get to that absolute peak of Marcus Mariota, which his numbers were just stupid and
absurd.
Ridiculous. Like, absurd. Yeah. Like, when I went back and actually looked at that for the piece, it surprised me at how absurd those numbers were.
Well, even Milton as a sophomore, he was eighth in Heisman voting last year. He was
incredible. Yeah, he was terrific. And if you have, and that's the thing too, is that when you're that efficient and have a bevy of playmakers around you, it makes that offense really dangerous. And you can see just from this recruiting class how they're trying to build that exact same thing, is that you have guys that you can look at that UCF offense and say, oh, okay, Dominic Watt will be like Smith, right? Or, you know, Katerian Legrone or McGriff could be like their tight end that they had Jordan Akins. Like, their Miles Jones could be their Otis Anderson. Like, there's just ways that you can quickly look and identify how they're going to try to go about building Nebraska's offense in that same way. And I don't think fans would be upset with that at all.
It's almost like that's the strategy.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like they have a plan.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. It's weird to see that. Let's put a bow on the 2018 recruiting class, because, like we've already mentioned, it's done.
Yep.
It's wrapped up. Coaches are back in Orlando taking some time off. You guys are getting ready to take some time off, you guys being recruiting analysts and gurus and experts. Put a bow on the recruiting class for me. How do you think this transition class wrapped up?
I think it went really well. I think that in very few cases can you say with this one that they missed on guys that they really, really wanted. And how you know that is you can really name them. Jarrett Bell, Javonte Jean-Baptiste, Marcus Riley were basically the guys that they missed out on. Joshua Fleeks, running back that went to Baylor, stuck with his commitment down there.
And Jean-Baptiste was like he like flipped four times on signing.
Yeah, so like between Jean-Baptiste and Jarrett Bell, both guys that were going to come to Nebraska and then decided to flip. Yeah. Jarrett Bell a little earlier, kind of drew it out, ended up at Arizona State. Jean-Baptiste, he actually called Nebraska staff on signing day morning and said, I'm in. He committed on signing day morning, but then had to delay his signing ceremony with his school because of a snow day. And this all sounds made up, but it's not. He delays his signing because of a snow day. In between the time where he was going to announce and he had the signing, Urban Meyer calls him back and says two key things. One, Greg Schiano is going to stay. He's not going to go to the NFL and go to the Patriots. Greg Schiano was key in that recruitment. B, you're not going to be developed as well as a defensive lineman to get you ready for the NFL at Nebraska as you will at Ohio State. Look at what me and Larry Johnson have done. And side note, you're going to compete for national championships here. Jean-Baptiste switches back to Ohio State. Nebraska ended up with Caleb Tanner. The rest is history. It's not history yet, but we'll get to the history when we play them.
I tell you what, in 3 years, how great would that be from a recruiting standpoint for Nebraska, or from just a puff out your chest standpoint for Nebraska, if you're playing in like a this has national title implications game against Ohio State with a Caleb Tanner, who's like one of the top defensive linemen in the country.
Yep, and he comes there like he is like on his way to the NFL because he's been sacking the quarterback left and right and playing really well. Yeah, that would be great. Like, and it just gives you more fuel for that fire for when, you know, because Nebraska's going to play them plenty over the next few years. Ohio State stays on the schedule. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just another reason to kind of look at that Ohio State target and really want to get after them.
Did Ndamukong Suh drop off the map? Is he not a thing anymore?
I guess he did, but what I'm assuming is you're going to see Sue again back here soon. I think that you don't see him around here a lot. Yes, his name is on the weight room, if you don't know, but and he donated a lot of money for that. But I think that he'll be back a lot more, and I think they'll be able to leverage that relationship going forward.
I've also noticed that when he works out, he doesn't wear Dolphins gear. He usually wears red, not Nebraska logo, but he wears red and not Dolphins gear. Or black. Is that something that you've noticed too?
I have noticed that because there was one recently where he was wearing black, and I did notice that he never has Dolphins gear on.
No, he doesn't. Yeah. That's weird. Greg, thanks for taking some time on a Friday. You've got better things to do. You going to see Black Panther this weekend?
I will see it this weekend, tomorrow, Saturday, in IMAX. Can't wait.
You're driving all the way to Council Bluffs to see the movie when we've got a theater like 5 minutes walking distance from us right now.
Yes. I don't see the issue.
Man, that is dedication.
It is.
Greg, bud, thanks for joining. We'll have Jacob here in a second, but appreciate you.
No problem, man.
Joining me now is the newly mobile,
yes.
Freshly carred, Jacob Padilla. You got a car now, man. It's glad to have you back in the land of the Huskers. Welcome back to Lincoln.
I appreciate it. Yes, it's been rough the last couple of weeks since my car died, but just signed off on new car today. 2016 Chevy Sonic, so I'm excited about it.
You got one of those. Wasn't that one of the Transformers in like the third movie? Like the one right before it was too many?
Okay. Well,
do you know what I'm talking about?
After one was too many, so
okay,
no,
that's
I
fair.
Don't.
Okay. There, that, I think that car was in the Transformers. Off topic.
Believe it.
Nebraska.
Yeah.
We're going to talk hoops. We're going to hit on hoops pretty heavy with you here. You wrote a piece this morning that just went up on HailVarsity.com on James Palmer Jr. and just the fact that he can pretty much just score when he wants to. He's got a good knack for finding his way into points. Talk about his game and how it has evolved, because we've seen him scoring a lot more over the last 6, 7, 8 games, but we've also seen him running the offense and distributing a lot better.
Yeah, and that's something earlier in the year, he was kind of the king of like garbage time points of after Nebraska's already down 10 or 15, then at the end he'll go and get a couple buckets and get it up into his double figures, which he's done all but twice this season. But in recent times, like those points have become a lot more meaningful. He's doing it when the team needs him to, as opposed to after the game's already over. And that's something like I know hearing from like earlier in the season, coaches, they were worried about Glenn Watson Jr. They weren't really worried about Palmer. It's like, well, he'll get some buckets, but he's not going to win the game for them. That has completely flipped. Now it is Palmer who is carrying this team. And I was, when I went and started to write that column about Palmer's chances at All Big Ten first team, that was just a couple weeks ago, and I was kind of dubious, like, because the first half of the conference, he wasn't very efficient. I mean, he's putting up some points. So it was like he was solid. I was like maybe third, maybe second team, but he is the second half of the conference, the last 9 games now, he has just been a monster.
It was like when we started our tournament chances post that we did, like early on, it was like, well, this might not last very long. And it has turned into something that, it's definitely something that we need to talk about. Same with All Big Ten. It was kind of just like a funny thought at the beginning that you would have a Nebraska player on first team All Big Ten. And now it's like, I mean, he had 24 in the second half against Maryland and single-handedly almost won them that game. Now it's a very realistic possibility that he could get it.
Yeah, and in that first half, he was 1 of 6, only had 2 points, although it was an impressive 2 points, that dunk in the first half.
Herter jumped.
Yeah.
He jumped.
Yeah. And that's a very good thing for us that he did, yes. Unlike Candido saw against with Isaiah Roby in that Rutgers game.
But. No appreciation post for this dunk, no. But... Shout out to Herter for jumping and giving us a poster.
But even like I went through and even the shots he missed, like but most of them were pretty good shots. It wasn't like he was taking terrible shots. Just a couple of them rimmed out. He got blocked once. And while he wasn't scoring, he had 4 assists in the first half. He a couple of times he created opportunities for others. Once out of the pick and roll, once out of driving and just kicking to the open man after drawing the help. And the other two were just moving the ball and finding the open man. And so he's still. I mean, he scored 2 points, but his assists led to another 11 points. So he still accounted for 13 points in the first half. In the second half, he just took over, like you said, 24 points. And it's all transition. It's all pick and roll. It's all just getting downhill off that dribble handoff weave action. Like, that's when he is at his best. He's so good at changing directions, long strides, even if the defender is kind of stride for stride with him at first. Like, all it takes is 1-2, and he's past him because his strides are so much longer and his arms are so long that he can just get past you and finish. And he was a monster in that game in that second half.
Real quick, I've seen a lot of this recently on comparisons because everybody likes to compare players to other people, and James is a little bit slower in his movements, a little bit, some say direct, some say...
I say methodical.
There you go. That's good. Methodical. I hear Paul Pierce as a comparison.
Pierce is more about jumpers and things like that. And when Palmer's settling for his jumper, that's kind of when he gets into trouble. And most of his misses in this game were jump shots. And so Pierce had more of that step back. Palmer can hit those shots, especially when he's feeling it. But Palmer's more about getting the rim, I think, than Pierce ever kind of. I mean, in his younger days, he did a little bit more of that. But just in terms of
slashing and attacking.
Yeah, just in terms of kind of like not necessarily being the most explosive, the most athletic, above the rim type of player. Yeah, I see that kind of comparison. I just think the way they finish off those plays is a little bit different.
A jump shot that Palmer did hit was that 3. Against Illinois, the first time they played him, yes. Back on, what was it, what did we say, January 15th?
Correct.
He hit that 3 to win the game. They're playing Illinois again. This time it's on the road. I'm not worried at all about this game. They're playing much better now than they were a month ago when they met Illinois the first time. Are you worried about this game for Nebraska?
Not really. Like, about 4 or 5 games ago, I was pretty, especially after that first Illinois game, I was pretty hesitant. Like, I was struggling to buy fully in because of how much they had struggled, even against the lowest teams in the conference. Like, against that Rutgers, they only won by 6.
And then only scored Illinois. 60 points.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, no matter, it was just so hard, especially knowing what this team has done in the past, to buy in. But I think lately we've been seeing them get better and better. And Illinois, on the other hand, just looking at, they've lost 4 straight, and basically the losses have come against every level of the Big Ten. They've played guys in a team in the bottom, kind of team lower half, team in the middle, and then one of the best, and they've lost them all by 8 or more. So that's kind of the range that I'm expecting here, about 8 to 12 point win. I think Nebraska will get it done, and hopefully Glenn Watson can hit a shot or two, maybe. Maybe that can
get him a little bit. Yeah, that'd be nice for his confidence. He just seems like he's not playing with a rhythm right now. But I do like Palmer being really, really good right now and scoring not just garbage buckets, but scoring in the flow of the game really helps alleviate some of the issues they would have had
if
they weren't getting this kind of production from Palmer, because they're not getting they're not getting points and they're not getting playmaking from Glenn Watson. That game is on Sunday, 2:30 tip. Is that right? 2:30. It's an afternoon tip on Sunday. On Tuesday, do I have my date right?
I believe
for Indiana.
So.
Tuesday for Indiana. We'll say tentatively Tuesday for Indiana.
Yep. Tuesday, 8 o'clock.
There you go.
Another one of those late ones.
Tuesday. the 6 o'clock game was really great for us as media because we didn't leave the stadium at 11 o'clock at night. But it was not good for crowd at the start of the game. This one, I don't think we'll have an issue getting people to attend. This Indiana game is going to be important. They're not the Indiana of yore, but they're good. And Nebraska needs wins regardless of who is on the other side of the court. This game is really important. How do you see this game playing out, this Indiana Hoosiers game?
Yeah, and last we had heard from the university, they were still a few tickets left for sale, but the thing, not a ton. And Penn State game, the last game, is already sold out. So,
no sit Sunday.
Yeah, I think Nebraska will be fine crowd-wise to close out this season. But yeah, the tough thing about Indiana, they've had some injuries, they've had some defections, and it's Archie Miller's first year. So they've had a tough season, but they still have one of the best players in the Big Ten. Juwan Morgan has, I mean, people talk about Isaiah Roby as the most improved player in the conference. Morgan is right up there as well. Like right now, I've got him no-brainer first team all conference. He is just doing everything for that team. Kind of 6'8", 6'9", forward, plays defense, has really improved offensively, rebounds, can score inside in the post. He's just doing a little bit of everything for them. And he is going to be a tough matchup. I'm looking forward to seeing him and Roby go head-to-head, actually. I'm assuming that's going to be one of those matchups. And that'll be fun to see. Hopefully, Roby can stay out of foul trouble. But their guard play isn't super strong. Devontae Green, the younger brother of Danny Green, I think has been playing a little bit better lately. But Robert Johnson hasn't had the season I think that they were hoping. And Joshua Newkirk was kind of disappointing last year and has kind of stayed that same kind of guy. So they're kind of short in talent, but they make up for that with a guy like Morgan. So you're going to have to keep him in check.
Short on talent, big on heart. Heart, hustle, grit. The all-heart Big Ten team. The Big Ten might be down, but there are some ballers conference.
And that's the thing, too, like about why I was so surprised by how bad the Big Ten has been, is there are a lot of guys that should be good players, that should be, or heck, the guys that even are having good individual seasons. It just hasn't kind of really come together to field a ton of good basketball teams for whatever reason.
Well, you look at it top to bottom, and there's a dude on every, like there's a dude on every team. Like you look at an Iowa that's just awful, and they've got a guy, Tyler Cook.
Yes.
That's fantastic. Yep.
Yeah, sophomore, big-time scorer inside.
He's fantastic.
Well, and even Illinois, you got coming up, LaRon Black, 6'7", kind of forward, scored about 15 and 5 a game, efficient scorer. He's been playing well lately for them, too. So even Illinois has got somebody like that that's going to be tough. And that's the thing I noticed when I went through and wrote that all Big Ten. I went through, I don't even know how many guys. I got past, I think, up to 20 different players. Just kind of factoring in for the like top two, top three Big Ten teams. So it's definitely not a lack of talent on the top end that has hurt the Big Ten this year. It's just the teams haven't come together very well.
Which has hurt Nebraska, which sucks.
Yes.
But that's something that I guess we'll move into now because it's hard to have a conversation. Excuse me. It's hard to have a conversation about this team without talking about their tournament chances because that's all anybody wants to talk about at this point. They're a very realistic possibility of going 14-4 in the conference. Already a 20-win season for the first time in the regular season since the 92-93 campaign. That's not going to be enough, though, to get into the tournament because of the Big Ten being down, because of the lack of quality of wins. They're not just going to be able to say, we have 14 Big Ten wins, give us our ticket, thank you.
Yeah.
If I've seen kind of conflicting viewpoints on this from different people. Some people say, win out the rest of your regular season, win a game in the tournament, and you're in. The Big Ten tournament, that is.
Yeah.
They have to win the rest of these three games. I think, are we in agreement there?
Yes.
Yeah. What do they have to do once the Big Ten tournament starts? Is it just one win? Is it just have a good showing in a game, get a win, don't get blown out in the second one, and then you're in? Or what needs to happen?
Well, so they could, I think they could get themselves in with one win, but I don't think one win would be a lock. It depends on a lot of what else happens with other bubble teams. What happens with Michigan? If Michigan closes strong and can get themselves up to that tier one win, and then you beat them again if they basically went out, and that'll look like another good win for you. Maybe that'll get you in. It depends on what other teams do as well, though. If other teams get more quality wins down the stretch, then maybe you do need to beat a Ohio State or a Purdue or a Michigan State to real. I think if they do, if they win. If they beat Michigan and then beat one of those big three, I think they're in. Because then you'll have those two to three quality wins. And then my thing is, so that to make an tournament, you need a good record and quality wins. Nebraska's got a good record. They're going to have a really good record. But finishing fourth in the Big Ten alone doesn't matter because you look at this Big Ten, and this isn't the Big Ten of last year. It isn't the Big Ten of the year before. Their conference finish, their conference record really doesn't mean anything. because of how bad the Big Ten is. You have to look at what those who those wins have come against.
And that's not a knock on Nebraska.
No,
if Wisconsin was in this situation, if Wisconsin was 14-4 with the same number of quality wins, the same 0-6 record against quadrant run teams, this would still be a discussion with them. It has nothing. I don't think it has anything to do with the jersey.
And I saw Brandon Ubell tweet about that, former Husker. And yes, I agree 100%. It comes down to the lack of quality wins. And I have this argument with people. That's all it comes down to right now. Mm-hmm. That's all that matters. They're 1-6 against, I think, 1-6, I think, against teams that are either going to make the tournament or have a chance to. And I'm including Penn State. Because they've played themselves in the bubble now. If they went out and they beat Nebraska, they're going to have a chance to steal Nebraska's bid here if they do something.
They're 2-6 against KenPom top 50 schools.
Yeah,
with those two wins being Michigan and Maryland, and they've played three against the top 10. I keep going back to that Kansas game.
Yeah,
because it continues to just kill them.
Yes, 100%. And that goes back to the fact that they only had, what is it, two? Creighton and Kansas are their only non-conference games against tournament teams. And
yeah,
because of that,
it's just bad.
So when you schedule that way, I mean, part of it, it's not all Tim Miles' fault. He thought some of the teams they were going to play were going to be good, and they ended up not being. Either they didn't come together or injuries or whatever happens. But when you only schedule that many teams and then you schedule so many against the bottom, you're really setting yourself up for boom or bust games.
You
have to win them because you're not going to have other chances. And we didn't realize they wouldn't have those chances in the Big Ten either. Honestly, I mean, you look at their schedule breakdown. They underperformed based on what I expected in the non-conference, and they've overperformed in league. But how much of that overperforming has to do with everybody else they're playing against?
I mean, it's a hard deal. But I at the end of the day, I think that they will get in, and I think that they'll do enough to get in because I think that they've got a win or two in them in the Big Ten tournament. It might not matter. They might get a one seed. They might get a number one seed. Did you read? It took you a second to register what I was saying. Did you read Pete Thamel's report from Yahoo Sports yesterday that was basically college basketball as we know it is going to come to an end?
I didn't read the whole story, but I did see the highlights and the select quotes that have jumped out to everybody.
So you haven't gotten to read the whole thing.
No.
But basically the gist is lots of teams are going to be crumbling. Yeah. Lots of teams are going to be in trouble. Lots of players are going to get in trouble. This is airing of years and years of a bunch of dirty laundry, and it's going to come out, but there's not really an idea of when that release is going to come.
That's the point.
If it comes before Selection Sunday, we have some fun.
I believe the quote was, you might see Tennessee Chattanooga as a two seed.
As a two seed.
If all this comes out before the tournament, before Selection Sunday.
Which means Nebraska is a number one overall seed, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's right.
Yeah, you would certainly hope that Nebraska is in the clear based on recent history. Heck, forget recent history, just the entirety of their program. If Nebraska gets caught up in this, I don't think they got their bang for their buck.
Yeah, Greg and I already established that they should be clean based on didn't get their bang for their buck. Is that what you said?
Yes.
That's a great way to put it. Very wink, wink, nudge, nudge type of way to put it. Yeah, they should be clean. Give me one school that you expect is just absolutely going to be caught up in this. And you can't name any of the schools that we'll already name. So Auburn, Arizona, Louisville, and Oklahoma State, you can't say them. So one other school.
Kentucky.
Okay.
UCLA.
Okay. We're just going to name off a bunch of schools. That's fine. Keep going.
What are those 16 seeds? They said half of the top 16
seeds. North Carolina,
seed.
Duke, Kansas, Michigan State, Ohio State, the Blue Bloods. All the schools that have been winning everything over the last two or three decades. You expect all of them to just kind of be involved in this.
I will just say, it's rumors and this toss around, but the two I mentioned right away, Kansas and UCLA, I have heard things about players going to those programs.
Is this sources say? Is this a version of the Ringer sources say?
Yeah, this is a little bit of that. I haven't vetted these reports, so don't go. But it's just things you hear just talking kind of the people I've talked to. And so, I mean, it's not surprising at all. But, I mean, like we're talking about, like, it's going to wreck the entire field, like all the good teams. So, I mean,
it's okay that you haven't vetted this because podcasts are where reporters and news people go to share news that doesn't properly fulfill their outlets' vetting processes. That's why you hear all of these things come out on ESPN podcasts because if they were to write an actual story, it wouldn't get published because it doesn't fulfill. So feel free to drop whatever nugget you want, feel free to say whatever you want, and we will take it as absolute fact.
Yeah.
That's what happens on podcasts.
Well, I think you pretty much should take everything I say as fact because I'm always right. But
not on the Big East, though. If you are on the Varsity Club, Hail Varsity's forum, if you are on the Varsity Club, you know that Jacob Padilla feels very strongly about the use of the term Power 5 Conference as it relates to college basketball, because he feels that the Big East should absolutely be considered a major conference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's unquestionably a better conference than the Big Ten this year.
But you're using RPI. All bias aside. You're using RPI solely as your argument.
How about tournament teams?
I'm not going to argue.
Big East is going to have more tournament teams with less teams in the league.
Yeah, the Big East is a better conference this season than the Big Ten. But so, I just want to play devil's advocate with you.
Yeah, I was just pointing out just the hilarity of not. It's not just you. Like you said, you did it just to kind of tease me a little bit.
Egregiousness of not including the Big East as a power conference in college basketball.
Yeah, and it's not you. It's like the general discussion. You hear that again, other podcasts, you hear people talking about on the radio all the time, and it's just dumb. Like you're purposely excluding relevant teams. I don't understand it, why you would use that term. The Big East is not as deep as it used to be because it has almost half the teams. But I mean,
the Big East has two of the top four teams in the current rank.
Yes.
Am I right?
Yes.
Is that right?
And 60 or 70% of the league is going to make the tournament.
And the defending national champion, Villanova won it last year, right?
That was two years ago. Yeah. North Carolina won it last year.
Villanova, who has been number one for a long time this season, and Xavier, that just beat your boys Creighton.
Yep. So I just was pointing that. I don't understand why you'd ever – if you are a smart person talking about college basketball, I don't understand why you would ever use that phrase. You're just limiting your scope for some strange arbitrary reason.
I am not a smart person talking about college basketball, then, is what we have concluded on this podcast.
You said it, not me.
I think on that note, we will wrap it up before I take any more shots. Jacob, thanks for joining us. It's good to have you back on the podcast, and we didn't go an hour this time.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you.
Well, hopefully now I have a car. Maybe I'll be able to make it down here a little bit more often.
Yeah, now that football is kind of dormant, I guess, with coaches in Florida and the recruiting class being wrapped up, now we got basketball to talk about for hopefully the next month.
That would be nice.
Maybe. That'd be nice. We will be back next week. I don't know if I'm allowed to share with people the news about the podcast, but we have news about this podcast, and hopefully that is going to get shared in the coming days, weeks, maybe in the future. I'm excited. You guys should be excited. It is a new day.
Yeah, big things coming.
Big things coming for the Views podcast. We will have coverage through the weekend on Nebraska men's basketball. We will have coverage next week on Nebraska men's basketball. Jacob is going to have a story up later tonight from practice. Yeah.
Either tonight or tomorrow. I've got another story about a future Husker that I'm potentially going to be working on as well. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, just stay tuned to Hail Varsity all weekend.
He's hard at work. And the magazine came out. Recruiting Issue magazine came out. So make sure to get a hold of that because there's some good stuff in there from not just Greg, who we talked to earlier, but from Jacob as well on Nebraska recruiting in the state.
Yep.
So it's something that you guys are going to want to read. And just keep it with us always, really. I mean, just don't ever leave hillvarsity.com.
That would be accurate.
Just have it stuck in your loading.
Make it your homepage.
Yeah. Just do that.